Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. We're doing the show early this week on a Tuesday night. Not sure if anyone can work out why. First, I'll introduce my guests. I've got Shane Lees.
Hello.
I've got Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
I've got Dan Tracy.
Good evening.
You guys all well?
Yeah, apart from the fact I thought it was Wednesday.
Seriously. Yeah, it's an early week, isn't it, this one? It's all muddled up now. It's a bank holiday and we're doing the podcast earlier in the week.
I genuinely didn't know that today was Tuesday. I've gone the entire day without knowing it's Tuesday. How have I done that?
I'm not sure if any of our viewers can hazard a guess why we're doing it early. Well, Leicester have won the league, and after Spurs only drew 2-2 with Chelsea. What do you guys make of it, Leicester winning the league? I guess we've been predicting it for a while.
That's a bit naff, isn't it? You know, everyone's been going this is a great achievement. It's down there with Chelsea winning the league in 2004. If you can't tell...
It's better than when Chelsea won it in 2004.
If you can't tell, I'm being sarcastic. This is fucking incredible.
In comparison, though, to some of the other, achievements that have gone on in football, so you're, looking at, say, Denmark winning the European Championships, or Greece even winning it, the United treble, the Arsenal invincible season. Where's this in comparison to them?
I think it's utterly incomparable to any of these types of things. You compare it to, say, a cup, a trophy or something like that, and it doesn't compare to that because you're talking about 38 games over a season. You talk about comparing it to the Invincibles, comparing it to the great Man United teams. Again, it doesn't compare because you're talking about in the years when these big clubs had so much more money, they were so leaps and bounds ahead of these other clubs that to do what Leicester have just done, it's so much different. People talk about Nottingham Forest as the most comparable one. But that's around the time when there was a relative equalisation between the leagues, between the teams in the leagues. You didn't have super, super, super rich clubs just able to outspend everyone by an absolute mass. That wasn't the way it was. You could go and do that with a club. But to do it in the modern era, the money era, where all the values of football are being sort of disregarded, all the history and traditions of football are being disregarded, and to do what they've done, Leicester, it is incomparable. This is its own thing.
But is it not the case that sort of there has been a bit of an equaliser again in the last couple of years?
Oh yeah, no, I definitely disagree. We're starting to go that way, but I think we're still at the early stages of that equalisation. So to do it so early I'll put it this way: if we were really progressing with the equalisation, you would have seen teams like Southampton, Everton, West Ham, all these sorts of teams, not just challenging for top four, challenging for the title. And you know, none of these teams are anywhere near that, at least not for a few years. So for them to do it this early, it's a bit like a 16-year-old becoming the World Cup top goal scorer. It's just remarkable. You couldn't see it happening ever.
You look at Leicester, and in the last 5 years, they've spent £64 million on players. In the same time, Manchester City have spent £472 million. Chelsea have spent £475 million. So,
spend.
Pardon?
Have you got United spend handy?
432.
I tell you, it is...
The big one for me, though, is that Liverpool, that's always the side that moans about how much the other sides are spending, they spent £354 million in that time.
You're quoting those figures, and I just think this is so wonderful, because even if you are a big club fan, this is why you love football, because it's bringing it back down to all it really is going to take is hard work. A bit of quality, good tactics. It's the things that, you know, you can win with a Sunday league side. That's how you win the Sunday league, isn't it? That's how you can do it. And it's saying at a professional level, that's still possible. And I think that is the footballing dream. Doesn't matter who you support now, everyone's thinking, why can't our team win the league? Leicester could do it. Leicester should have been going down. This year started with their manager's son racially abusing a Thai woman. And Jamie Vardy abusing a Japanese man in a casino. They should have been nailed on to go down, and they've won the bloody league. Everyone now is the football dream is back. It's no longer this big corporate commercial mess that it had become a little bit. It's back. Football's back.
Well, and you look at so many clubs in the league every single season, and they're there just to make up the numbers every year. You know, that past the top four or the top five, then there's just a big chunk of clubs that are always just going to be there or thereabouts and never going to aspire to anything. And now they can aspire. You know, you look at like a West Ham. they're certainly going places. Even Spurs, that have always been outside the top four for so many years, they're now looking at probably going to be the club going forward for the next few years.
I mean, even if you're like, for me, as a Southampton fan, the dream has always been, we make it into Europe. We get European away days at Southampton. Great times, great times. And I've always thought to myself, be really, really nice. Probably not going to happen. Maybe I get it once or twice in my lifetime. Big European Champions League nights. Maybe, if I'm lucky. Now I'm looking at it and thinking, shit, we have a good year. If we do what we did this year and don't slip up like we did, or have those bad injury spells, there's no reason why we couldn't. And I do think that every fan, if you're a Norwich fan and you stay up this year, you'll be thinking, actually, our team isn't really that bad. You got, you know, Nathan Redmond, Stephen Naismith. We make the right additions. We sign a few players who go a bit under the radar. Why couldn't we go and challenge for Europe? I know sounds ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous, but it was ridiculous of Leicester to go and do it. Suddenly it has just opened football up right away. And we've been talking about it for about 2 years now, that we're starting to see more, you know, better players come into the middling clubs and the clubs who are just aspiring to do a little bit better. It's so much more than that now, because it is showing that it isn't just about the money being spent. It is about effort. It's about passion. That is still a force in football that can win you a title.
Yeah, you look at, you know, would you have ever seen a player with the quality of Payet coming into West Ham in recent years? And you know, you're hearing that West Ham are probably going to be getting, who's the other French player up front? Lacazette.
Yeah.
He looks like he's on his way to West Ham. Yeah. It shows the quality that's coming into the Premier League now.
If these players were playing
not like, just at the top.
Yeah, if these players were playing for the big clubs, you know, Chelsea, Man United, they wouldn't look out of place. They'd be probably starting week in, week out. That's the point we're getting at now. Like, I look at a lot of Southampton's players and I think, God, if we hadn't sold these players, how good would we be? Well, we'd be pretty good because they're playing in all of the best clubs at the moment and they're kicking ass at these clubs. And so I do think it's a real wake-up call for a lot of clubs out there, especially clubs who would have been what you would have called selling clubs. I do think Southampton would have fit into that model, a selling club. Now we're looking at it and going, maybe it is going to be worth keeping hold of our players. Because there's no telling how high we can finish. The big clubs have not adjusted very well to the balance of wealth that is now coming into the Premier League, top to bottom. They have not adjusted well to that. They have not set up the right kind of infrastructures for stability, which was what always was holding a few of these clubs together. And so now, it is wide open. And I think for a lot of smaller clubs now, they're going to be looking at it and saying, why can't we do this? We have all of the means to do this. Let's give it a real go.
As a Premier League, though... Sorry, as a Premier League brand, with what Shane you're saying, like with the smaller teams being able to do things, it's obviously going to massively help the brand of the Premier League and help it grow into, well, what we see as the biggest league in the world.
Actually, I'd like to be optimistic on that one, but I think it will go against that. See, you talk about in England, yeah, we're going to love it. Premier League, it will open up fan bases within England that we've previously thought were locked off because of the perceived dirtiness within football. So we're going to get that. That's good. Maybe in Europe too. Okay, we're going to get maybe a bit more popular in Europe. Okay, great. The problem is the majority of the worldwide fans are glory hunters.
Can you not see internationally a load of Leicester fans coming in because of the way they've heroically won the league?
Yeah, but previously they were Chelsea fans or City fans or Tottenham fans or any of these fans. These fans are just jumping from big club to big club based upon success.
They're Premier League fans, not... Whether they're fans of any specific club is irrelevant. The fact is they're more interested in the Premier League than, say, La Liga or the Bundesliga or whatever.
No, these fans, they're already there, as far as I'm concerned. You're not generating new fans, but all you're doing is getting the glory hunters suddenly saying, oh, I'm a Leicester fan. I think the problem actually, it becomes worse because all of a sudden, the worldwide fans who want to support a winning team, that's all they really want to do, be part of a winning thing. All of a sudden, they can't really support the big teams in the Premier League because there's no guarantees anymore. So it's more likely to push them towards La Liga, where you can support Barcelona and you'll win it every bloody year. Or Bayern Munich. I do think it actually takes away from it. I think that's a good thing if we lose the shit fans. I don't mind that one bit at all. But I think if people think this is actually a good thing for the Premier League, they're not really understanding the mindset of the glory hunter. Which, good, because it means you're not a glory hunter yourself. But the mindset of that is we follow success, and if the big clubs cannot be successful, they can't support a little club because they don't know they're going to get it every year.
You see that, like, just not just overseas, because obviously, like, you see a clip of school kids playing in Africa or whatever, and half of them have a Chelsea shirt or an Arsenal shirt on, or United or whatever. But the kids at Noah's Football Club, a couple of weeks ago, four of them in training had Bayern Munich shirts on.
Yeah, it happens all over the world. People follow the successful teams. It's like, why does everyone love Dortmund? You can say it's the lovely story about Dortmund and all the fans, but bullshit, because they might win a title. Why is nobody supporting Levante in Spain? Fan-owned club. That's a pretty nice story, isn't Levante? No one supports them, though, because they don't win anything. It's the same story all over the world. There's no one's exclusive for it, but it tends to be people who are not domestically based in whichever country we're talking about. And so I don't think it will necessarily hurt the Premier League, but I think in terms of attracting more of the kind of fans who are just going to root for the biggest teams, the most successful teams, that becomes a lot harder for them, and they're more inclined to go to a league where they can get that.
Okay. I just want to move on and come back to Leicester themselves. How much luck do you think they've had in their title win? Do you think, because they've obviously not had any injuries, they've not played in the cups and that. Do you think there's been a big element of luck, or do you think it's been a small factor?
I think every title-winning team needs some element of luck. I also think the last 6 weeks, the fact they've played before Spurs has certainly helped them as well, because they've been able to put down a marker each week and extend the gap and put the pressure on Tottenham with each result that they get. I think other teams will, and other fans of other teams will look for conspiracy theories, me included perhaps, as a Spurs fan, but I don't think they've been overly lucky or...
There's been a few games the last few weeks where decisions have certainly gone for them.
I'd say there's been as many that have gone against them as well. But the thing is, I think people mistake that referees don't want to make a decision that's going to influence the title race and then get called out on it. It wouldn't matter if it was Leicester. If this was Arsenal at the top and Tottenham chasing them, they'd be still thinking, shit, I don't want to make the wrong decision. And then because they have that mindset, they make the wrong decision because they're suddenly thinking too much about whether or not they're making the right or wrong decision. They aren't making the correct decisions in the right moment. I think that comes down to it more. With the whole luck thing, look, they've done what, 36 games now for Leicester? And they've lost three of them. That's not lucky. You don't win 30.
You roll your own dice. There's certainly been an element of, like, with the injury front.
Oh, yeah, but it's like poker. People can say, oh, it's lucky if you win at poker. Yeah, go and talk to people who make millions every year playing poker. It ain't luck. They're good at it. They are very damn good at it. It isn't a luck thing. Yes, there are elements of luck within it, just as there are in any walk of life. But to say Leicester were lucky, I think it comes down to hard work more than luck. Much more.
I think not playing in Europe has certainly helped them. You know, just focusing on one game a week and not progressing so far in the FA Cup has certainly aided them, because it's literally a case of get that big result, onto the next one. So that's, you know, allowed them to pretty much play the same team, because they've hardly had as many injuries due to lesser games. So that's going to give them a massive boost in terms of sort of trying to get the results they need. Also, I think going back to the referees' decisions and getting sort of the decisions going their way or starting to look more obvious, I think the first one was Danny Simpson's, was it a handball against Southampton? In any other game, you'd probably sort of think that's a penalty and a red card. And I think that's a sort of the moment you thought, well, hang on, I think Leicester are going to do this, because I think the referees are sort of, like I say, not wanting to sort of be the focal point themselves, so it's easier not to give decisions. And I think they've had a bit more of the rubber of the green over the past sort of 4 to 5 weeks, but I think it's just sort of the roller coaster of the whole Leicester season, really, isn't it? So you can't really be pointing at referees.
I would say that Leicester were fortunate. I wouldn't say that they were lucky.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Like the decision for Southampton, I saw that, and in the game, I genuinely thought that's a 50-50. I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought, if it doesn't hit his arm, it's his chest. And so the thing is, when it's the 50-50 decisions, rather than the, shit, they've just bang out got that one wrong, wasn't that lucky, the 50-50 decision is just a little bit of good fortune to say it's going this way or it's going that way. Whereas most clubs, it balances out over the year, so to speak. For them, it went more one way or the other. But that, again, some of those situations can go either way. With the Europe thing, though, one, I don't really buy that, because every single club wants to be in Europe. And, you know, that, I think that's an element of bullshit to sort of go, oh, we were in Europe. Hard on us. You want to be in Europe. There's probably ways to opt out of it. They're not going to mandatory make you fly around the world and play these games, are they? And two, I think it's fairly well established at this point that fitness isn't a question of good luck. Well done, you didn't snap your Achilles tendons. It's good coaching. It's good fitness training. And let's not forget, Leicester last year had a similar situation. They had very few injuries. So it wasn't one thing.
You look look at United and Arsenal and the
year after year.
Clearly something wrong in the fitness.
This season they just got lucky and it all worked out from good timing. That's clearly, if they've done it 2 years in a row at least, and I didn't really follow them enough beforehand to know whether or not they did it for those years before, that's an example of good coaching, that's an example of good fitness training. It's taking each player as an individual and working around them. So I think when people talk about the injuries thing, yes, there's some fortune to injuries, like contact injuries. That's luck. That is luck. There's nothing you can do about that. But I think it is also an element of a sort of bullshit, basically, where you sort of go, oh, we had all the injuries. It's an Arsene Wenger excuse. It's a Wenger excuse. Oh, we had all these injuries, so we couldn't play very well. Well, you spent £500 million on this bloody team. I would expect you to have some depth. Also, hire better coaches. Come on.
Well, I think, you know, the fact that, say, Leicester have played, I don't know, the top end, only, say, 40 games in all competitions, and then you look at Tottenham and Man City, they're looking at near 55, almost 60. That's got to have some bearing. It might not be, you know, the build, sort of, the factor that will win the league or not, but to play an extra sort of 15, 20 games, it's going to have some bearing in going once in a, you know, once a week. Look at Liverpool in 2014, they weren't in Europe. They had exactly the same situation, but only finished second that season. But it's just, it must be much easier just to pick yourself up for one game a week and focus all on that game, opposed to having to decide what team you play in a certain competition, like Pochettino had with his Dortmund dilemma, didn't he? So, I mean, it must go some way to helping, certainly, because you've got a lighter load of fixtures.
I don't disagree,
with that, if you've got less games to play, then there's less chance of injury. So they sort of...
No, there's definitely an element, like fatigue. Fatigue is a very simple element now. All of us can understand. We experience it in our everyday lives with jobs and all that sort of stuff. Fatigue is definitely a thing. But at the same time, that's why you have more than 11 players in your squad. You balance that. If you're in the League Cup, for instance, and you're saying this is going to mess up our fitness over the season, play your young players. Maybe you can turn around and say, we don't want to win this so much. All right, play your young players. You don't have to play your first 11 every single time. But it's stupid to do it. If you know you're going to have that many games, change squads.
But Leicester's active squad has been about, what, 14 players all season is the point. Like, apart from the starting 11, they've got three strikers in Ojoa, Okazaki and Vardy, but they're not, you know, there's not a lot of other options they've had and they've used over the season.
Yeah, and good on them because they figured it out.
I do think
it's a conscious decision for them to have gone out in the cup. It's not like they've gone, yeah, we need to lose this game. It's like we didn't try quite as hard as we should have done because they knew they could possibly win the league. They probably knew that quite early on when they were having a really great time. They thought, okay, maybe we can get top four or maybe we can get Europe just in general. And they sort of made a conscious decision to do that. You can't damn these people for having one, good fitness training, and two, for making smart decisions, which over the course of the season pan out. This wouldn't have been such an amazing season for Leicester if they finished fifth and they got to the semi-finals of the FA Cup. It's not as good a season.
No. The other thing, though, is you've got contact injuries as well as muscle injuries. You know, like, someone could have slid in on Vardy and he broke his leg, for instance. You know, that's not happened. No player's had a serious injury during a game, which, you know, can happen to anyone. That's not anything you can coach into players.
Oh, yeah, but that is certainly the element of a good fortune that they have had. But at the same time, it's one of those things, that's a good thing and people are damning them for it. Well done, nobody snapped Vardy's leg in two. Aren't you so very lucky? No, that's the kind of thing that's not supposed to happen in the first place. It's like, good. Good.
But I'm sure if I looked at all the other teams, I could name players who have missed parts of the season through an injury which you cannot say, you know, which is completely outside of their control.
Oh, yeah, and just, you know, a club that has less injuries, yes, we're going to be able to play a more consistent team. They're going to get better morale, better team cohesion, all this sort of stuff. And yes, that's going to make an impact over the course of the season. But at the same time, there's no reason why any other club in the Premier League shouldn't have been able to do exactly the same thing. That's the thing that really annoys me when people put out these arguments and saying, oh, well, Leicester kind of had it easy. Bullshit. They had the exact same... They started on the exact same basis as every other club this season.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Oh, yeah, man. No, I know you are. And when people say that stuff to me, I'm just sort of like, are you... Fuck off. No, seriously, just, like, fuck off with your bullshit hipster, I've got to criticise anything popular. Fuck off with that. That's such right, shit.
I just want to talk about Leicester next season. I was looking at the odds for them. They're 25-1 to be relegated, 33-1 to the league title, top four's 5-1, and to win the treble, i.e. the Champions League, Premier League, FA Cup's 5,000-1. So if you fancy a long shot like the people that did this year, that's the one to go for.
No, I think it's Norwich to win the league next year.
Well, there's people talking about betting on Burnley to do it, so, well, you never know. So, yeah, what do you guys think? What, can Leicester, well, can they follow it up with another league title, or,
you know,
what do you expect them to do next season?
Top six.
I'll agree with that. I think this idea that Leicester is going to drop away, it's the same kind of, misplaced bullshit that we've had this past year. Leicester are going to drop away. They're a small club. They don't belong there. Well, they've already proved they've got the players to do it this year. Not many of them are going to leave because they've got Europe and that fantastic team spirit. Not many of them are going to be wanting to leave that behind. Not so soon anyway. And now they're going to have absolutely tons of money that if they do identify a weak area of that squad, they can improve it. And I think they've already shown that they're savvy spenders.
Players I'm going to disagree with you, Shane. I think they're going to plummet.
Really?
Yeah.
I cannot see
Kante and Mahrez staying.
I can.
I think both of them will be gone in the summer. Yes, they will get a shed load of money for them. I'd say probably 40 million for Mahrez, 20, 25 for Kante. But when you look at the rest of the pack that's around there, you know, Spurs are going to be up there again next year. I can't see the big guns having as bad a season as they've had this year. Chelsea will be back in amongst it. United should be getting a bit better again. City will be back in there. I don't think they'll perhaps finish towards the relegation, but I will see about 10th next season.
I don't buy that. I don't buy this whole belief that it's just going to be normal service resumed. The Premier League is not going to get any easier for the big sides next year because every single one of them is going to be a tougher.
Look at Chelsea last year. Look at Chelsea this season. Where have they finished? Look at United this season after they won the title. And they had a lot more going for them, like resources-wise, than Leicester are going to have coming up next season.
Yeah,
and they all plummeted.
The reason why Leicester have done so well, and again, this isn't taking it away from them, is because the Premier League has become more competitive. The Premier League isn't going to get less competitive next year, which is what's been holding back the big teams. It's going to get more competitive. It's going to go the other way.
Well, everybody will now know what Leicester are about. For those games against Leicester, they will raise the game.
Also, I will say this. I don't buy that these Leicester players are going to be leaving. I think, especially if they lost, let's say they do sell Mahrez and Kante. First of all, I think your valuations are well off. If another Premier League club, for instance, came in for Kante, you're looking at upwards of 40 million. If another Premier League club came in for Mahrez, you're looking upwards of 50, 60 million.
Nah, not that much.
No, it's not. I'm not saying they're worth that much. I'm saying Leicester will say, pay this or fuck off. If you're going to pay 50 million for some twat from Portugal who's been playing in midfield for 1 year, you're going to be paying that much for Kante, who's just won us a title.
But would Leicester be in a position to turn down the 40 million for Mahrez, which Richard suggested?
Yeah, because the money's balanced in the Premier League.
Soon as a big club come in for either of those players, the agent will turn the player's head and they'll be gone.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all.
No, I agree with Richard. I think someone like Mahrez, if he gets his head turned by, say, Barcelona, if they're coming with the bids, I think they'll also probably know that this is perhaps as good as it's going to get at Leicester, because I don't think, obviously, they're going to win the title next season. So maybe it's a case of, if they were to leave, they need to leave this summer, because I don't think their value will be maintained the season after. So I think Mahrez is a £40 million player this season, and they've then finished 10th, as Richard suggests, and you could probably shave about even almost half that value off. So I think Leicester may also think, we don't perhaps want to sell these players, but if we do, let's try and sell them at their peak to get more money.
Well, I do buy what you're saying, that they're going to look at it and think, job done, we won the title, we're not going to do any better, maybe move on to better things. But I think a lot of them will not be thinking job done, they'll be thinking job half done, it's Europe now. Or at least one season in Europe with Leicester. I think a lot. And what was your second point?
I think Vardy will stay.
Vardy, yeah, I definitely think he's going to stay. He's going to become a club icon forever, for eternity. Can't see why he'd leave. But
the other two, I think, will certainly be. I would stake money on those. The other two being gone this summer.
I genuinely don't think they will. And I don't mean to be a dick, because I know I'm about to come off as one. But you two are big. All three of you are big club fans. Not only are you used to things going your way, and yes, Dan, Tottenham are a big club. You're finally there. Not only are you used to things going away, you're expecting it and you're wanting it to go back the way. I think this is a lot more desire rather than reality. I can't see how after this season these players are going to leave. And especially the whole thing, Leicester will think, oh, we can get some more money from them. I think for the Leicester owners, money, the priority of money has just changed. They realise how popular they can be. And these Thai businessmen, you know, not to group them all into one, a lot of this is about popularity. It isn't just about the money. And for them to think that money's going to be important, how much profit are Leicester going to have made this year? It's going to be in the realms of 100 million, isn't it? Profit. Yeah. We're not talking about, you know, that's their overheads. That's profit. They are going to be looking at this and going, why do we need 60 million? Would yeah, be nice
but,
to have a free 60 million.
Can they turn around in a couple of weeks' time when suddenly Barcelona put in an offer for Mahrez and are offering 200-250 grand a week? Can they suddenly blow their price, their wage structure out of the water and do the same?
I was going to say, my one exception will be Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. I think they're the only three players who could take those. Three clubs who could take those players.
No,
I think anyone else would be
City,
rejected.
PSG.
Nah, I don't.
City, PSG, Chelsea, United are in there as well. They can do the wage structure for them.
I think they could reject any of those other clubs on the basis that the players wouldn't push so hard for it. I really think you're overestimating the big clubs pool as well as the mentality they've got around Leicester at the moment. How many of those players are going to be, even when the offer's coming, thinking, don't want to be at Leicester. I don't want to be here with these fans that will adore us forever. This club that will pretty much give us whatever wages we ask for if we ask for them. And playing amongst all these people who are going to be my best friends for life to a manager we love playing for. How many of them are seriously going to go, well, Barcelona in? Yeah, fuck off. Have that. How many of them are going to do that? No one's going to want to be the first guy. It's going to be like the picket line. No one's going to want to be the first scab who turns around and says, no, I'm not having this. I'm off to Barca. No one's going to be wanting to do it.
I think you don't know the mindset of a modern footballer as much as you think.
And I think you're too used to things not being like this year and you're expecting it to just go back to normal. It won't happen. Premier League's changed.
I think we're going around in circles. What I'm going to do, I'll set up a poll after this on Twitter and see what our listeners think, because...
Hashtag Team Shane.
Sorry?
Hashtag Team Shane.
But it'd be interesting to see what the fans, you know, what the listeners think. Something I do want to mention is a poll Chris put up before. He asked, what will Leicester do next season? 4% of people said they'd win the title. 25% said they'd be in Europe. 57% mid-table, and 14% of you think they'll be relegated. So, yeah, it's the results of the poll.
I personally think top four, and they make it to the after round of the group stages of the Champions League and get knocked out by a big team.
The other thing, well, that's what I want to ask. Like, something I'm looking forward to seeing is seeing Leicester play a team like Barcelona or Atletico Madrid or, you know, Bayern or someone. Can you see that being, you know, is that something you'd look forward to next season?
Oh, yeah, and I think...
Yeah, because it'll just be different, won't it? Because, let's be honest, it's the same, almost the same four teams representing England in the Champions League. So just to have a new face in the competition and, you know, the novelty of it almost, isn't it? Like you say, meeting those top tier of European clubs, I think it'd be a great watch. I think, for me personally, that would be the games, if Spurs aren't on the telly, that I'll be watching, just because it's something different.
Yeah, and no, I completely agree with that.
I think I've sounded like I've been poo-pooing on Leicester.
Oh, no, I don't think you have, but...
I'm very much looking forward, actually, more so to Spurs in the Champions League with the team that they will probably have next season. I think they could actually go quite far.
Yeah, I'm very excited about Spurs next season. I don't really like Spurs that much, but I like what they're doing at the moment. So I'm looking forward to Spurs. But I will say about Leicester, they're going to have an absolutely shit European coefficients. So they're going to be, what, fourth or third seed in their group?
No, they're the top group.
Oh, okay. Oh, right, okay. Well, if you win your league, you're automatically a top seed now.
Oh, excellent.
So Leicester will be top seed.
Either way, I think they're going to have not the easiest time, come second in their group, and then end up getting one of the big boys in the next round, and that's when I think they'll go out. But I still think it will be an amazing experience for them, and it will be amazing to see a new team from the Premier League in the Champions League. I think that will be very good. And that's the one thing I will disagree with what I said earlier. I think that will be one good thing for the Premier League, having a bit of freshness. But I don't think that will last long term into being good for the Premier League.
See, I think that's... I'm disagreeing with you once again on this. I think it's possibly bad for the Premier League long term for the English coefficient.
Are you the new Nick? Are we the ones who normally disagree? No,
we've got a bit... breathing space, because City's running Europe.
Yeah, City and Liverpool certainly helped get into the last four of theirs. But as it stands, it's, you know, Italy are not far off us now.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs will be in possibly even pot four next season due to their ranking. So you've got to hope that at least sort of two or three of the English teams do make the at least the round of 16. But again, I suppose it's comparable to how the Italian teams do. But there's a bit of breathing space, because it was almost touch and go sort of halfway through the season, but City's and Liverpool's runs have extended out a little bit further, so there's a little bit of leeway. But yeah, I don't think you can have necessarily a few years of only sort of one or two teams getting out of the group. So you'd have to sort of keep an eye on that, I think.
I do think it's about to come full circle for English clubs back in the Champions League, because I think you're seeing a lot of, there's a lot of good sides obviously in the Champions League in terms of the big clubs, but I think in terms of the nations that aren't Spain, Germany, Italy, the clubs are getting, I'd say they're either stagnating or they're getting worse. And the irony is, the majority of the clubs we are playing and going out to are not clubs from these big countries. It's Arsenal getting shit on by a Belgian side, and then consequently coming second in their group and then getting knocked out by the Germans or something like that. So I think it is very close to coming full circle, and we can see us put a bit more distance between us and Italy.
All right, well, we'll move on from Leicester. Just something I do want to mention, Spurs, of course, who are looking like they're likely to be runners-up this season. Mainly, Dan, I want to ask, do you think it'd be fair of me to say that they've bottled it, you know, after Chelsea come from 2-0 down to draw 2-2 and drawing the previous game against West Brom? Would it be harsh if I said they've bottled it, or is that something that would be fair?
I think bottled is a bit harsh. I know, because the fact they've they've drawn the last two games, you'd think, oh, well, they've chucked it away. But let's not forget, they never really had it to chuck it away in the first place. Yeah. So always playing catch up.
But had the last two games, they'd be 3 points behind Leicester and with every chance.
Right, but they'd still have to win all their last games.
They could probably allow for, you know, one sort of two wins out of three. But I think I don't think it's necessarily bottling. I think they've obviously not helped themselves, of course, with those two draws. I think the key factor yesterday, they just lost their heads in the second half. They just all fell apart, really. Once Cahill's going in, it just, you know, it just sort of collapsed. And then Hazard scored. And I think, because they're a younger team, they didn't really want to, well, they obviously wanted a winner, but they sort of just wanted to kick lumps out of Chelsea. So I think if the team was a bit more experienced and a bit more drive, they would have searched for a late win and hopefully made it 3-2. But I just think the young team got shown up there, and you could say, oh, well, you know, it was a steely performance and they took Chelsea on. But I think it's at points, it was the kind of things you don't really want to see from your team, really. So,
I do agree.
Bottling is a bit harsh, yeah. I think. But yeah, we haven't done enough. So credit to Leicester.
I think well, bottling's harsh mostly because bottling something is implying that their mental state was that they were under pressure and then folded under that pressure. I don't think that ever happened with Tottenham. I think a bit like Leicester having a bit of good fortune, Tottenham had a bit of bad fortune. And it's just, and again, it was Leicester's to lose, not Tottenham's to win. They would still have, you know, realistically to have won all of their games. And that's just unrealistic by any standards, let alone this season's Premier League. So definitely not bottled it.
One thing that they have sort of done in the last couple of games, though, there's certainly a tetchiness emerged from a few of the players.
A lot of petulance I've noticed all of a sudden. Dele Alli, his punch, you've got Lamella stamping on Fabregas, Carl Walker.
Dias should have been sent off.
I don't know how he didn't get sent off. He was just ploughing into everyone last time. You can make a case for about three of his tackles who could have been straight reds, and Spurs will get hauled in front of the FA because getting 9 bookings is just obscene, really. I mean, it was a battle, and it's great, you know, from a neutral point of view. For me, I didn't enjoy the last 10 minutes at all, but yeah, there's a...
The one game that reminded me very much of was not the Pizzagate Arsenal versus United one, but one from a few years back from that where it ended up in a mass brawl towards the end of the game. I think 21 of the 22 players got involved between the two clubs, and it ended up with Arsenal getting 2 points deducted and Man United one. I wouldn't be surprised if Spurs actually got a points deduction for last night. For the way that, like, Danny Rose at the end of the game basically just shoved heading off the side of the pitch.
Well, we're probably, yeah, you're right. I can't condone it at all, really. And now, if you look at possibly the bans that could be hanging over some of the players' heads, like Dembele, possibly Lamella, Rose, you're looking at those three missing the start of next season if they're not careful. So it's, you know, it's not long-term damage, but it's going to have a bit more of an effect than just throwing away the title last night. But yeah, something just triggered something last night, and it just all fell apart, really. It's just a crazy, crazy sort of end to the game.
I know you're saying it's not what you want to see in football, and I completely agree it isn't what you want to see in football, but I do think this is what we're talking about with bottling it, about pressure. I think with Tottenham, what we saw was almost a bit of a fight or flight thing, and they fought. They fought in maybe not the right way. Yeah, they didn't fight necessarily in the right way, but it's in the right area. It's just not being utilised correctly. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that it happened. It just wasn't done in the right way. You want to see them get really passionate and put in good tackles, not just gouge people's eyes and push over old managers. So, yeah.
It's good to see players that, you know, tempt it so much. Yeah.
Maybe
you know,
it's just
players that turn up every week for, you know, $250,000 in wage and barely care about the badge that's on the shirt. You know, it's nice to see players care, but they, obviously they need to rein it in a bit there.
Having said that, I think last night's game was one of the most entertaining, along with the Leicester United game as well. Both, you know, the two games I've seen this weekend are the best two games of football I've seen over a weekend for a long time.
Yeah, they were great games. For me, like I say, personally, I couldn't really enjoy yesterday because there was too much riding on it, but I'm sure from a neutral point of view, everyone, you know, two rivals kicking lumps out of each other, what more could you ask for? It was just, you know, great from a non-Spurs point of view. I think, yeah, Spurs, it was great to see that they care, the passion's there. If they just reined it in and took it down a notch, then you almost have like a fearsome team, but it shows they're no pushovers, but I think it's an incredibly tight line you're walking in terms of discipline if you sort of play like that every week. But
it's one of those ironic games where all the pundits and all that will come out and go, you don't want to see that in football, isn't that really all bad and nasty? But 5 years down the line, they're showing that in those highlight matches as going, what a game, great to see that kind of passion. So I think it's just going to come round eventually. People will be like, yeah, that's what we want to see a bit.
Well, that's the thing that's been levelled at Spurs probably over the last few years. When they played the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea, they've often just rolled over and let them tickle their bellies. And it's great to see that now they've got a bit of gusto about them when they're playing the other big clubs and they're not rolling over for them.
Just one final question I want to ask and then we'll move on from all this Leicester talk. What colour underwear do you think Gary Lineker will wear on match of the day, first match of the day next season?
Pink with polka dots.
Leicester blue.
It's got to be Leicester City underpants with a fox on his crotch.
Do you think he'll actually do it? Or
Pink and white polka dots. Pink and white polka dots, easy.
Well, Gary Lineker's asked for a grand on it himself because Cole put it as 33-1. So we'll move on anyway. We'll move on to the first round of our quiz. So, Richard, it's over to you as our esteemed quiz master.
Okay, right, well, this is a continuation on from last week, because it seemed to be quite popular. Basically, I have already PM'd everybody involved a set of 15 answers. One of the other people on the quiz has to then give clues to these answers without using, obviously, the answer. It's basically the same as one of the rounds on Question of Sport, or Think Charades. Everybody has a minute to go for it. Because Shane wasn't on last week, he's going to sit out this round so he can just listen in and understand how it works properly, because he seemed to be a bit simple when I explained it.
I'm cleverer than all of you, I swear.
So I'm going to go for the first round. I'm going to have Anthony giving the clues to Dan, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, I'm just going to set my clock. So on your marks, get set, go.
Italian club, Higuain plays for them. He's having a party.
Jamie Vardy.
Signed for City for $32 million when the owners took over, the rich owners. Brazilian guy.
Fabinho.
Yes. When the ball goes out of play on the sideline.
Rowan.
Wales manager.
Chris Coleman.
BT Sport crap commentator. Plays for United, Leicester and Liverpool.
Michael Owen.
Yes, Dutch team, champions. No, the other one.
Ajax.
Yeah, they're at the bottom of the championship. They were relegated last season.
Bolton.
No, London team.
Charlton.
No, Playing white. We'll move on. Unbelievable, Jeff. Unbelievable.
Chris Kamara.
Yes, it's not the champions.
Stop!
I'm sorry, did you just reduce Michael Owen to being that shit commentator on BT Sport? Like one of the most illustrious strikers in England history, and he is now simply that shit commentator on BT Sport.
He is a shit commentator on BT Sport, though.
That's not the argument. It's Michael bloody Owen.
The one from before was Fulham. I couldn't...
I got Fulham. I shouted it out in the end.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I was trying to describe Europa League without using the word Europe. I was going to say Champions League, but
I think that's a hard one, that. You got, in total, 9.
Ooh. That's better than last week. I had a shocker last week. I'm pretty proud of that.
I presume we're quite... Are we best going on to a second round now?
Yeah, we are quite far in time.
We'll go on. We'll do all the quiz now, then.
Okay. All right, so the next one, we're going to have Dan giving his clues to Shane.
Shit. Right, here we go.
Okay, so just bear me a second while I restart the clock. On your marks...
Hang on a minute, sorry. Will it work for the... Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah, it's the same as last week.
This is going to go horrendously.
Yeah, sorry, my bad.
I'm in a laughing mood, so this is going
to
go bad.
Yeah, because in the next one, it'll be then Shane giving his clues to you.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, no, that's fine, sorry, yeah.
Here we go. Okay, so you ready, Dan?
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay, on your marks, get set, go.
French league team based in Monte Carlo.
PSG? Monaco?
No, Monte Carlo.
Monaco?
Yeah, Man United's new super striker, young kid.
Anthony Martial?
No, the younger one. Ukrainian AC Milan striker, previous.
Andrei Shevchenko?
Yep. You'd be awarded this if the other team did a back pass in the box.
Penalty, indirect free kick.
Yep. Champions of Europe 1979-1980, Brian Clough?
Nottingham Forest.
Yep. England manager, failed for the World Cup 1994?
Pass.
Okay. AC Milan and Holland striker, got that amazing volley in the Euro 88 final.
Pass.
West Ham chairwoman or chief executive woman, whatever she is.
Karen Twat, something. Pass.
Yeah, that'll do. A defending Karen Brady. Position. Yep, a defending position, not a fullback, but a...
Sweeper? Centre back?
Wing back.
Oh, thick.
So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 in total, I'm saying there.
I got Karen Brady.
Yeah, I'm giving you Karen Brady, because you said Brady afterwards. Graham Taylor you didn't get. Michael Van Basten.
I wanted to say Nigel Taylor, why?
And that one just then was going to be wing-back.
Oh, I did terribly there.
Yeah. Which club did you say played in Monte Carlo?
I heard French Monaco. Club. I heard French club, just went PSG. I didn't really listen. That was my problem. that went well.
Right, so that's 6 for both of you. So, Dan, what did you get in the last round?
9. 9,
so you're on 15 at the moment.
Okay.
Okay, Shane, do you understand that? Ready for yours?
Yeah.
Okay, you ready, Anthony?
Yeah, ready.
Okay, on your marks, get set, go.
Gary Neville just managed them.
Valencia.
Newcastle's current manager.
Benitez.
Yeah, there we go. Bulgarian striker, used to play for Tottenham, used to play for Man U. Okay, yep. Roma's rivals, they share a stadium with them. Light blue kit. Pass, you don't win it.
Go on, move on.
You don't win anything with kids. Who said it?
Alan Hansen.
Okay, it's Man United and Everton are playing in a final of it. What's it called?
FA Cup.
But what's it for the lower leagues?
The Johnson's Paint Trophy.
Take that last word and put the first two bits together. Oh, you pass. You win 3 trophies. What's it called?
Treble.
The club that is Man United's rivals wears white.
Wears white?
They're in the Championship. Yorkshire.
Leeds.
Derby player, good prospect, midfielder.
Well, news.
We got that.
Right, in total then, you got Valencia, you got Benitez, Berbatov. Didn't get Lazio.
I explained that one well.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
Got Alan Hansen, didn't get the FA trophy.
Yeah, I tried that one. I couldn't figure out how to explain that one normally.
You got the treble, we got Leeds United, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I suck at this.
That's a tie break.
Well, no, Dan's the winner again.
Didn't he get 6 as well?
Well, yeah,
no,
but he got...
6 and 9.
Yeah, and I got 9 in the first one.
Oh, you did, yes.
Oh, shit, tie break.
Right, I will give you a clue then, and the first one to shout out.
Can I play?
Okay, right. I'm trying to think of a way to do this, and you both get it. Italian goalkeeper play
Buffon.
One of the best. Pardon?
Buffon.
No. Played in the 80s.
Dino Zoff.
Yeah. Oh, out of nowhere. Wow.
Winner.
Chicken dinner. Cheers. God damn.
I was trying to think of a clue for the other one, which was Rodri Giggs.
Are we allowed to talk about that or not?
Probably not. I tell you what this does prove, though. I am, in fact, not the cleverestest of us all.
Yeah. Not in this type of game, no. You do well at other quizzes, but this is not your quiz.
Quick answers I do not do well in.
I think it's a good quiz, though, in because the Google isn't in it, working in it.
No.
Well, I just can't talk that quickly. Or think that quickly. It's like Lazio. When I couldn't explain Lazio in two sentences, I didn't know what to do. They play in blue. What else is there? Who plays
Lazio? I think that was a decent clue. Okay. I think we can talk about a certain Mr. Giggs, can't we? It is on the back pages and such from the weekend.
Probably.
But I don't think anybody overly cares, do they?
Yeah,
nah, not really.
You know, he's fluttering his eyes at a waitress once, that was about it.
I think people are more interested in the relegation battle, though, which is what we'll move on to. Do you like the transition there?
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
That was brilliant. Yeah, safe move.
Well, we'll start with Villa, who are, well, obviously not in the relegation battle. They've been relegated. They've lost their last 11 games. Couldn't get a win when they were 2-1 up against Watford in 90th minute. They lost 3-2. And yeah, it's very unfortunate for them what's happening, and I can't see them winning any of the last two games.
No, I mean, after Saturday, you want the club to be disbanded after that performance. You know, giving away a 2-1 lead with minutes on the clock to go, it just sums up their season, doesn't it? It's just miserable, like, abject. I've run out of other terms to use, really. It's been that bad. So they've got, was it Arsenal on the last day of the season? And don't even know, they're playing this weekend, but they're not going to get another point. It's done, isn't it? So, Championship awaits.
Not the worst points tally in the Premier League, though. That's still held by Derby County. They've got 16 points and Derby got 11. They've won two more games than Derby did this season. So, yeah. It was better weekend for Newcastle, who got a win. They beat Crystal Palace 1-0 and they're now out of the relegation zone on 33 points. But they've played an extra game than Sunderland and Norwich.
Haven't Sunderland got two games on them?
Sunderland and Norwich have both played 35 each.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Could have sworn. All right.
I've got the table in front of me.
Sure,
and,
I'm wrong a lot on this podcast.
I'm still hoping that they relegate all four of them.
Wow. Aren't you an optimist?
Do you think, who do you think will stay up, like, of the, well, of them three teams, of Newcastle, Sunderland, Norwich?
Ironically, I think the team that is arguably the worst of them all will stay up, and that's Sunderland. Don't know why. I just think Norwich don't really have to see that much fight, do they? I mean, Newcastle, you're seeing a bit of fight, but they don't have the best fixtures coming up. Sunderland have got better fixtures, I think. But Norwich, they're just not really... It doesn't seem like anyone's actually told the players they're in a relegation fight. They're not playing like they're fighting for every single game, every single point.
The thing is, it was a long time ago, because we were talking about when they beat Newcastle 3-2, you know, about a month ago on the podcast. And now, you know, since then, they've lost a few games and... You know, we were saying about how much fight they had, and now they look done, and I can't see them getting anything more this season. I think I mentioned it last week. I said they'll probably lose their last four games, but we'll see. I'm not feeling confident for Norwich staying up. I think personally, it's between Sunderland and Newcastle.
No, I think
if Norwich went down, I don't think anybody would notice.
Harsh but accurate. Yeah, they're not really notable in any way for anything in this entire season. Sounds harsh, but they're doing a bit like West Brom, only far worse, just existing, and then maybe going down at the end of it. It sounds really harsh. At least Newcastle, they've had a go, didn't do it particularly well, and they're getting a bit of fight now that they've got Benitez back, and Andros Townsend is actually looking like the player we all thought he was. And Sunderland, again, they got Defoe, they got Allardyce, they're putting in a shift, they're putting in a fight. I do reckon Sunderland will stay up. But Norwich, again, I've been watching it, they've got players who are fighters. Like, you wouldn't say Stephen Naismith is anything other than a fighter. But at the same time, they're just not really... They don't look like they're in a relegation fight. They look like they got a bit too confident that they weren't going to go down, that the other teams were worse than them, and they haven't really woken up to reality, but they've got three games left, and unless they get, I don't know, two wins, they're probably down.
Mm. But, like a club like Newcastle, it's a team that when you get your fixture list at the beginning of the season, it's one of them games that most teams sort of look forward to. It's not perhaps like one of the big clubs that you hope you're looking forward to a game, but it's always a decent game you get against Newcastle. Sunderland, perhaps not as much so. Whoever looks on your fixture list and thinks, yes, that's the Norwich game.
Yeah, Newcastle, you look at and go, away, okay, yeah, St. James's Park, that'll be a good fun day, and at home we can probably do them over. Norwich, you look at it and go, should really be picking up 6 points here. You probably look at that advert of a one game you're playing against them and think, we should probably get 6 points somehow, score that many past them.
But apart from being an Ipswich fan, whoever looks down the fixture list to search for the game against Norwich?
It does sound harsh, but for me, if you're a club that's like that, as in you're not a big club, you haven't really got much, I don't know, without being harsh, footballing culture. You know, like, at least Newcastle have footballing culture. They've got the history and all that. Look, if I was a Norwich, you know, manager or chairman or anything or whatever, I'd be saying, well, why don't we just go and make a really extravagant way of playing and get some plaudits for that? Why don't we actually try and, you know, do something with this? And no one's going to notice us, so we can sort of fly under the radar maybe doing it. Let's have a go at something rather than just, again, West Brom existing. At least West Brom have got Tony Pulis, who is good at just existing. I mean, what did Norwich really have? So I think they've sleepwalked themselves into a relegation. And I think
got feet with six toes on them, but that's about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I just think you kind of deserve it, Norwich. You've literally just, it's like you've taken a really, really long shit and haven't realised that it's been an hour. That's what Norwich have done.
They were meant to be doing it. Lasted an entire season.
They were meant to be doing it for 15 minutes at tops, but they were looking on their phone and went, oh crap, literally.
Okay, very harsh assessment of Norwich there. Sunderland got a decent 1-1 draw at Stoke, and that a big point for them in the fight against relegation.
I think they should have really won that game, though. Like I said on the podcast last week, Stoke season's all but done, and they haven't won in God knows how long. I think they've only picked up previous to that point in four matches, and they'd shipped 14 goals in that same period. So I think Sunderland would possibly think that they should have really come away with a win. Maybe the way they played didn't deserve a win, but they would have looked at that game beforehand and thought there's 3 points there. And also, Stoke's goal was a bit iffy, and the build-up of Peter Crouch was all over, I can't even remember the defender now, but the Sunderland defender and Allardyce was moaning about that. So they got a vital point, but they probably wish it was three. It hasn't really helped them, what with Newcastle winning at Palace on the same day.
Going into that game, I expected Sunderland to win, but I guess with the manner of how they got the point with that last-minute penalty, it could be...
Oh, it's good for morale. It's good for morale. I still think Sunderland are going to stay up. First of all, they've got the game in hand. I mean, Newcastle have got Aston Villa, so that's a guaranteed win. That's 3 points, no matter what you do. But Tottenham, last game of the season. They're not going to win that. I can't see them winning that. I don't think Tottenham are going to go, oh, we don't win the title, let's roll over. I think Tottenham are going to actually try kind of hide it after this point. And then you look at their other games for Sunderland. Chelsea, at home, they can get points in that. Everton, at home, they can get points in that. Watford away, they can get points in that. They could win all three games and it wouldn't be a shock. Whereas Newcastle, they can only get, I think, 3 points between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, but for Newcastle playing Spurs, Spurs might not have any players because they might all be suspended.
I don't think they'll have all been suspended. I still think they could build a better squad than Newcastle. But I just think if we look at it in a simple way and assume that Aston Villa is a guaranteed 3 points, all Sunderland need is, I think, 4 points if they've got a better goal difference. They do have a better goal difference. Yeah, 4 points. That's what they need.
Yeah,
4 points from the last three games. And you look at those games, Chelsea at home, Everton at home, Watford away. They can pick up 4 points.
Newcastle play Watford as well, don't they?
No, Newcastle play Villa away and Tottenham at home.
Oh, yeah, sorry. No, yeah. Sorry, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
If Tottenham secure second this weekend, though, that's a free hit for Newcastle, I think. So I think a lot of it will rest on this weekend's results as to whether Newcastle have actually got to go up against the Spurs team still playing for something. Otherwise,
I think Tottenham after this season, with having had such an amazing season, last game of the year, I don't think they'll be rolling over.
Well, I'm not saying rolling over, but, you know, if it's seconds in the bag and you, like it's been mentioned, you know, there's going to be a fair few players suspended. It's there for the taking for Newcastle. I'm not saying Spurs are going to chuck the game by any means, but the intensity will probably drop a little bit and Newcastle will look to make the best of that opportunity.
This is when everything we say is shat on as Villa pile four past Newcastle every weekend. It's just a massacre.
Just want to look at the top four race, which continues. We've obviously spoke about it last week, but United got the draw against Leicester and City losing to Southampton. What did you make of that, Shane, the Southampton victory?
Well, I kind of predicted that we would not get a single, you know, shot on goal against them because we are historically battered by City. That was an incredible performance. A lot of people were talking about how bad City's defending was, and yeah, it was atrocious, and that they were playing a weaker side. But at the same time, that is among the best I've seen us attack. Our passes were actually going forward rather than endlessly to the wings. Sadio Mane, he is the most frustrating player in the world because half the time he's awful. I mean, he's barely even, like, alive on that pitch. But then he does 5 minutes and he scores a hat trick and it's ridiculous. And suddenly we might get 50 million from him from Man United, and then they'll realise our bloody suffering with this guy. It was an amazing performance, and you know, not to sort of douse it, we had the advantage in terms of City were playing against Real Madrid, played a weakened side, didn't play well at all, but it was among the best performances I've seen in probably the last two seasons.
There was a bit of controversy on Twitter. Sadio Mane got man of the match, which, you know, to someone just, you know, seeing the score and that, he scored a hat trick, he deserves man of the match. But there was some controversy about on Twitter because they were saying Shane Long definitely was a better player on that day and deserved the man of the match. Can you?
Yeah, no, that's completely accurate. It was very much a Garth Crooks man of the match. He scored the goals. I'm including him in my team of the week. Shane Long was the better player. He had an absolutely outstanding game, and I can't see, you know, we paid quite a lot for Shane Long, and at the time we were all thinking, Jesus, that's ridiculous. He's paid it all back. He's a very good player. He isn't just a hard worker. I think he's like, what, 5'9", and he beats pretty much everyone in the air. It's ridiculous how good he is physically.
And, right as well.
Yeah, physically, technically, he's a very, very good player. And on the day, he was the best player. The only reason he didn't get it was because Sadio Mane scored a hat trick. A bit of controversy.
Well, City won the Europa League, and depending on what happens in the FA Cup, what do you think of the chance of getting in Europe next season?
Still good, because I'll put it this way: Man United drew at home, 1-1 with Leicester, and said, "Isn't this a good result?" No, I'm sorry. If you're Man United and that's Leicester, you still should be winning that game.
I think
wouldn't eight still get into Europe with the combination of
No, it can be maximum seven.
Yeah, no, because if Liverpool win Europa League, then their fifth spot goes to the Champions League, isn't it? And there's still three Premier League spots go up the grab. So then you're looking at Man United, as long as they win the FA Cup, West Ham and Southampton, so eighth could still get you into Europe.
Oh yeah, but I mean, that's under the assumption Liverpool win the Europa League.
I'm just saying, still a possibility, isn't it? Like,
oh yeah, I'm going to assume that for now we've got to get into seventh, and I'm assuming that's how the players are going to be approaching it. We've got to get seventh place nailed down.
Well, you'd have to be seventh and then hope Palace win the FA Cup as well. Win the FA Cup.
Yeah, I'm hoping United win the FA Cup on that count.
Top six would definitely get into Europe, and then anything lower, and you're sort of in other people's hands.
For me, for as a Serpents fan, it's been a good season, but not a remarkable season. We've done well. If we get Europe at the end of it, yep, brilliant, fantastic. I'll look forward to some away days, hopefully, to be able to go to. And I think every Southampton fan will. We'll hope we do a damn sight better than we did this year in it, because we just sort of didn't turn up even slightly. It's been a good season, and if we can finish seventh, I'll be happy with seventh. I'll be very happy with seventh.
It's been too many fits and starts for Southampton this season, and they've sort of been blowing hot and cold.
That's the perfect description. It's been a hot and cold season. It's like all of our players have had hot and cold patches. Mane's been incredible at some points in this season. Rest of the time, he couldn't even get into the squad. Graziano Pella, really good at some points in the season. Rest of the time, he literally couldn't have farted properly. I mean, if he tried to have farted, he would have shit himself, because he was trying all these ridiculous little touches. And I remember I saw him in one game, and it was ironically when he had his turnaround. It was against Liverpool. And for the first 60 minutes, he didn't put a single pass right. I'm not kidding. Not one pass actually connected with another player. That's how bad his touch was. But then, of course, he turned it around after that, and he had a bit of a good season from that point. But yeah, no, Southampton, we really need to start getting consistency. Because as I said earlier, if we had actually got a bit more consistency this season and balanced out our results more, I think we could have had top four. I think we had the players. Other teams
just
did
say that Garth Crooks did put Man United in his team of the week.
Of course he did. Garth Crooks would put a striker in goal if he scored enough.
He did have three strikers in his first 11 this week.
How does someone like that get a wage? Come on.
Just wanted to say a little bit about United as well. Fellaini and Robert Huth have both been charged with violent conduct.
Good.
What did you guys make of that incident?
Yeah, both.
I thought that what Van Gaal said afterwards was just possibly the most hilarious one line that I've ever heard.
Yeah, he didn't get it quite right as well, didn't he? It was only in sexual masochism. It's like, is that a Freudian slip there? Because that's a slightly different thing. Does Van Gaal like being whipped at home or something?
Does anyone know if his wife's got long hair or not?
Well, no, if it was masochism, that's when you enjoy it when you get hurt. Van Gaal's the one getting his hair pulled.
On a completely unrelated note, Van Gaal was also complaining that the expectations were too high. at Man United, not in the bedroom.
No.
Do you think that's a reasonable thing for him to say?
No, it's Man United. It's one of the biggest clubs in the world. Like, I don't like Man United, and I'm firmly of the opinion that the good days are kind of, they're never going to quite get back to how it was before. But yes, the fans should have those expectations. You should not be a Man United fan and going, wouldn't it be great if we got fourth? That's what Arsenal fans do. Man United can't become Arsenal. That's not unrealistic expectations to ask them to not be Arsenal. That's fair.
Okay. I just want to move on to a couple of other things as well. Burnley won the championship. We're going to discuss it in detail in the 72 show, which comes later in the week with the final game and with Leicester winning the league and all that. But, you know, it'd be great to see them in the Premier League next season.
Yeah, they'll have to buy a lot of players, though, because that's almost the team that went down last season. I think it's not going to do a half-decent job next season. So I think the players that's got them up, I think there's unfortunately going to need quite a bit of an overhaul. They're going to make a proper fist of it next season.
It's a good thing as well, and I do agree with what Dan said there. But I think, you know, we've had the Leicester story this year, and Leicester's a great story. I do think the Burnley story is a really good story as well, because it's not just... Let's not forget how ridiculous it was when they went up the first time. But it's also proof that if you go down, it doesn't. If you handle things properly, you can still have a go. You can still be a good club. You can still play good football. It doesn't have to be disaster. Not if you handle it properly. So it's kind of a good lesson to clubs like, I don't know, maybe Sunderland, Newcastle, and Norwich, that if you handle things properly at the end of it, you can still have good days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Arsene Wenger has also said this week that. He expected some of the process to be worse, and that it was him guaranteeing he'd stay at the club, which helped them secure finances. I don't really know what to say, to be honest.
That's like the entire Arsenal mentality just summed up in a press conference. I thought our spoilt brat fans would be more angry at being consistently successful, and the only reason I'm still around is because the banks like me. It's just like, that is that club. It's literally all just about money and the worst fans you can possibly have.
Is it something he was right to say, though, publicly? Like, personally, if that, you know, I don't think he should have said that, like, you know, out in a press conference. He should have just kept all that information to himself.
It's one of those ones. He probably shouldn't have said it, but he was bang on. He was correct about the Arsenal fans. He's been saying it for a few weeks now, actually. And he is completely right, I think. Arsenal fans just need to shut the hell up and realise how good they've had it. Seriously, look at United, look at Liverpool, look even at Chelsea. You could have had it so much worse.
And finally, I just want to preview the Champions League semi-final. Atletico Madrid will be one of the finalists. It's City versus Real Madrid tomorrow night. It's 0-0 after the first leg. Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be fit to play, according to Sky Sports News. So can we see City winning the game, or will Madrid make it a derby? Real Madrid make it a derby game in the final.
If Ronaldo wasn't fit, I think City would have gone on to win. I don't think Real Madrid have enough going forward without Ronaldo. I think that it's so centred around Bale then, and they can just close him down and that's it. With Ronaldo as well, I think they've got the options there. City's defence is pretty gash. I can't see him lasting 90 minutes stopping the pair of them coming out.
I actually disagree.
There was a lot of praise for the City centre-backs after the first leg, for Mangala and Demichelis.
Yeah, because they didn't have Ronaldo coming on.
See, I guess...
Company played, didn't they?
Yeah, Company.
First leg.
Company played in the first leg. I actually disagree with what you've said. Sorry. I think because Ronaldo's back in that team, Real Madrid are going to be a lot more attacking, and I think City will actually be more comfortable in that game being able to counter-attack. I think their players are set up for it. Your likes of De Bruyne, your likes of Aguero, your likes of, if Sterling plays Sterling, if he probably won't, you know, Navas, all that lot. They're set up for a good counter-attacking side. And I think Real Madrid, if it's not going their way in the first 20, 30 minutes, I think City could do them. I think they will win. I do think City will win. I'm not just saying that as an England fan.
It's a different Real side, though, now. It's not one where, you know, you've got, it's every single attacking player has to start. Rodriguez doesn't start most games now. Isco doesn't start most games now. You know, they're putting defensive midfields in with Casemiro, who, you know, just shuts down the opposition attack. It's a different side, and that's why they don't have as many attack options. You've got an attacking mid trio of Kroos, Casemiro, and Modric. None of them actually chip in that much on the assists.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a more balanced side than classic Real Madrid sides. But it's a side you can still get goals against. And I think I'll put it this way. If Real Madrid go one up in 30 minutes, they'll win. If they don't, City will win. That's my prediction.
The first goal is crucial.
Yeah, I was going to say, the away goal is such a big thing. Like, well, the lack of away goal for Real Madrid. All right, well, I think...
done at that point, then.
I think we've reached the end of the show, unless there's anything else people want to mention.
Nope.
Just quickly, the Atletico Madrid game, Yana Black has had one of the best games I've ever seen. I've had it on in the background, and since, well, it's been a crazy game. Both teams missed a penalty. Atletico ended up winning it 2-1, so they got a crucial away goal thanks to Griezmann, but once Lewandowski made it 2-1 on the night, it was an absolute siege on their Atletico's goal, and Black has just had an absolute worldie of a game, so Atletico Madrid have been well worth their progression to the final tonight. Well, excellent.
Atletico Madrid as well, we go on about some of the buys that they've had over the seasons, and you look keeper wise what they've done over the last few years. Yeah, it's unbelievable the constant players that are coming through that club. Because Jan Oblak, he's top three goalkeepers in the world for me now.
He's Slovenian, isn't he? Slovenian, Slovakian, one of those two.
Of those.
Why can't they just have an A and an O instead of both being Slav? Make one of them Slovakia. There we go. Everyone knows.
Slovenian.
I was right the first time. I see, I told you, I'm the cleverest. Ist.
It's Shane the cleverest.
Ist. It's cleverest ist.
I hope you've enjoyed the show this week. We've obviously spoke a lot about Leicester in this bumper show. We've got 72 show, which will be released on Thursday ahead of the final weekend of the season. Thanks for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter. You can check out our Facebook page, our YouTube page. Make sure you vote in our poll, which I promised to put up after the show. Thanks for listening. It's good night from me. It's good night from my guests, Shane Lees, Richard Hudson, and Dan Tracy.
Right.
Good night.